It doesn't take long to work our way through the newspaper, does it, before we encounter all sorts of horrific headlines of child abuse, tsunamis, different natural disasters like that, Syria in the headlines falling apart, all sorts of terrible things going around the world. And of course, the skeptic, the atheist, the one, the doubter, is going to come up with the age-old problem. If there's a God who's all-loving and all-powerful, then how in the world does all this evil take place? Why do so many children suffer? Why is there so much pain in this world? And of course, that's a question that's been wrestled with as long as people have thought about issues like this. So that's not a new problem, and it is one for Christians to face head-on. And it's survey after survey says that this is the number one issue that people ask about when it comes to doubting the Christian faith. In fact, just anybody, they said the number one question that people would like to ask God if they had a chance to ask a single question, it'd be that. Since there is a God, why in the world does he allow so much pain and suffering in the world? So that's what we want to tackle here. And please keep in mind that this is such a huge issue. It's so big. You can spend semesters in college classes going over it. Pastors could speak for months on the topic. So there's no way that we can get it handled nicely and neatly in a little wrapped up package here with one talk. So there are two other talks on the Emmanuel Faith webpage. If you have a chance to look at those, they cover different issues. One has clips from a DVD, and you can listen to that and hear what other people say. So we're just wrestling around with it as well as we can here, but just please keep in mind that this is a simple, quick look at the area. Well, let's start with this. Yes, that is a question, isn't it? If there's a God who loves us and has this great power, wouldn't he get rid of evil? And so the burden gets put on the Christian, on the believer, as if people that don't share our worldview are off the hook. Well, that's not true. It's just simply not true. They have to deal with that same issue of pain and suffering. Because imagine that they snap their fingers and God disappears. Does that really solve the problem of evil and pain and suffering? Absolutely not. The pain is still there. The suffering still takes place. And so we might want to start with asking these other worldviews, well, tell us your solution to the problem of evil and pain and suffering. And what are we going to hear? Well, let's take Eastern religions. A big part of the world buys into some of these Eastern religions, Hinduism and Buddhism and New Age philosophy and things like that. And what's their belief? Well, part of it is karma. So when you see pain and suffering, you see people in a miserable condition, what are we saying? Or what if we were in that society, what would we say? Oh, that person is paying for some misdeeds that he or she has done in a previous life. They're paying it off right now. So we don't interfere. We walk past that person. We don't give them money. We don't help them out of the gutter. We don't clean them up. We don't get them jobs. We don't straighten out their psychology. We don't do any of that stuff because this person is deserves whatever is happening to him or her. Also part of the Eastern belief is that suffering is an illusion and we must overcome that. Buddhism talks about the Eightfold Path. We have to reduce the desires that are causing the suffering. And they even call suffering Maya, the illusion. We just have to get our minds straight and clear out these negative thoughts and do our meditating and all this sort of stuff. And we transcend, we go beyond the problems of this world. And yet, of course, there's the key part there, right? And yet, somebody sits there and suffers. And we can't say to them, I don't think we can say to them, just think better thoughts. This person is going through something horrific. That's the last thing they need to hear. I don't think that's very helpful. What about the secularist, the atheist? What kinds of answers does this person have? Well, let's imagine an atheist walks into a hospital room and there's a child hooked up to machines and is fading and is dying, and mom and dad are there and some of the family members, maybe a brother or a sister are there. And what does the atheist say as he or she walks up to that bedside? So here's evil, here's suffering. What does that atheist say? I guess something like this. Gosh, sorry it didn't work out for you. Tough luck. You threw the dice and you lost. And what does he say to the parents? Well, at least your child won't be suffering for much longer. And then it's all over. Does that sound comforting to you? Well, I don't think so. That sounds cold. More cold than comforting. So I would say any other worldview has just as many problems. I think there's more problems with those worldviews. So let's not have the Christian have the burden of taking care of the issue of suffering, because every person on this earth has to decide how he or she approaches that. It's not a Christian's problem, it's everybody's problem. And it's only the Christian that has the resources and the true answer that can provide faith and comfort. So there are problems for other religions and other worldviews. But let's stay with this idea of problems that other people have first. Let's talk about the atheist. The atheist has another problem. Now here's how it works. The atheist says, I can't believe in a God when there's so much evil in the world. Here's a simple question. If you ever hear that, ask the atheist. Simple question. What do you mean by the word evil? And that person may look at you and say, well, all the bad things that are happening. And say, well, but what do you mean evil? Is it something you don't like? Or is it something more than that? Let's take ice cream. I don't like a certain kind of ice cream. Maybe I don't like chocolate. You like vanilla. Are we going to argue about that or get upset about it? No, it's just a matter of taste. Is that exactly what the atheist means? He or she just doesn't like things that are going on in the world? Is that the standard by which we judge good and evil, what each person likes or dislikes? I don't think so, because now we're in the area of ice cream, just things that we like that don't matter. So that really trivializes it. Oh, I don't like it. Well, I think the atheist or the agnostic might say, well, that's not really what I mean by evil. For me, it's been built into evolution. It's what human society says is right or wrong. But that doesn't work very well either, does it? Let's take, for example, the Germany of World War II, pre-World War II Germany. They elected, right? They elected Adolf Hitler as their leader. So the evil that was brought about during Hitler's Germany was something that the people inside Nazi Germany decided would be okay. That was their view of morality. And we come in at the end of the war with the British and the French and the Russians, and we put some of the leaders on trial that were survivors from the war, the German leaders, the Nazis. And we said, we're going to punish you for what you did, the evil you inflicted. And what was their defense? Wait a minute. Our culture, our society voted on what we decided was evil, and you're coming in and trying to impose your standards of evil and putting us on trial. You can't do that. So do you hear that argument going on there? The idea that evil is just up to each society to decide. And the Germans say, you have a different definition of evil. Why are you going after us? Because we have a definition of evil that's different than yours. And so that could have been a tough situation, except the prosecutor said, no, no, there is a standard higher than any individual society. There's a standard outside of people. We are not establishing evil. It's already been established. What are the standards of evil outside of the human race? If we don't have a standard beyond us, we have chaos. Let me give you an illustration. Suppose I go bowling. And I've got a friend back there, never been bowling with me before, and he's at the score table. And I throw the first ball, and it goes into the gutter. And I come back, and I say, yes, I get 30 points. Wait a minute, he says. No, 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 you don't understand bowling. You get 0 points. And I say, no, I get 30. And he says, where are you getting that idea? And I say, I'm making up the bowling rules as I go. Those are my bowling rules. 30 points for a gutter ball. And he's going to say, no, there are standards beyond you, established by some international bowling society, right? They've set these rules up. You don't get 30 points for throwing the gutter. You get so many points for a strike, so many points for a spare. You get nothing, zero, when you throw it in the gutter. And you see, if we bowled, with each individual or each lane deciding its own rules, we have chaos. Nobody can play anybody else. It's absolute anarchy. And so we decide, even on basic things here on this earth, that there ought to be standards beyond the individual or beyond the society. And that's the same thing here. The atheist cannot complain about evil unless he or she is smuggling in Christian standards. And so that's what they're generally going to do. All they can say is, I don't like it when there's starvation someplace else. I don't like it when there's child abduction going on. I don't like it when there are sex slaves in the world. They can't say that's evil. And yet they do, and they want to, because down deep in their heart, just like the rest of us, they understand there are standards of right and wrong that we didn't set up, that God set up, that are beyond every society, that are beyond the particular time that we live in, that are beyond the geographical boundaries of a particular nation. And so it's just odd to hear the atheists complaining about evil. So we can talk to them about that, about the definition of evil. Evil must be part of a standard far beyond us, which brings God into the picture. But let me continue then with what I would call philosophical Christian answers, and I call those philosophical to separate them from what I would like to cover in a few minutes, which will be emotional responses, Christian answers. So let's start with philosophical answers. In other words, these are the things that we can sit around a table when everybody's in good shape, everybody's doing okay, and just hash these things out. But there are going to be those times where we want our hearts to be filled. We want our souls to be satisfied, and we want emotionally to feel the power of the Christian message. And we'll talk about that in just a second. So right now, let's look at the intellectual answers that people have come up with as far as why could God allow evil and suffering in this world. And a good place to start might be the book of Job. So here's Job, poor guy. Everything gets taken away from him. Everything. He loses his families. He loses his wealth. He loses his health. His friends come along and try to talk to him throughout the book. He's complaining to God. He's upset. He's crying out to God. By the way, they talk about Job as a book that Job represents patience. There's a cliche talking about the patience of Job. He's not very patient, is he? No, in fact, he's got determination. He hangs in there. So he's got resilience, but I don't know that he's got patience. But Job complains all the way through, why are these things happening to me, an upright person? And when God finally comes in toward the end of the book, does he sit down with Job? Does he say, oh, look, Job, I'm sorry. It's been a huge test behind the scenes involving Satan. This is so that the angels can observe. It's so I can justify your actions. Does God say, let me explain it all because I'd like you to know what's going on? He doesn't. He doesn't do that at all, does he? In fact, all he does is say to Job, were you there, Job, when I created things? Do you know how these animals work, Job? Can you do this, Job? And Job over and over has to basically shake his head no. And finally, he just submits. So what's my first point here? A philosophical answer, a Christian answer, is God's ways, his method of doing things, is on such a different level than ours that it seems really presumptuous and egotistical for us to say, you know, God wouldn't do it this way. God shouldn't do it this way. God's got a better way. Really? We understand the way God works. We've got God all figured out. We've got him mapped. We've got all of his quirks and habits and everything completely figured out. We can't figure out human nature. How do we figure out God's nature? God is so different from us, this supernatural being from all eternity. And we have the nerve to say we know what God should be doing and he's not doing it. Let's get real here. Come on. So I think the book of Job is a great start. God's ways are beyond us, far beyond us. How in the world can our petty little limited minds comprehend him? Here's a second thing we can talk about, a philosophical answer. Why is there pain and suffering in the world? We can go back to Genesis, another book in the Bible. The world was designed without suffering. we brought it on ourselves through Adam and Eve. Now, some people say, well, I should have been there instead of Adam and Eve. But Adam and Eve were the stand-ins for us. They were the best the human race could have produced. They dealt with God. They knew God in a far more familiar way, and yet they turned their back on Him. As much as they had going for Him, they turned their back on Him. So we can't complain and say we weren't there. They were our representatives. And so God said, all right, that's the way you want it. You want to turn your back on me. Then we get what's called the fall. We get death coming in the world. We get chaos. We get the world, nature shaken. The world has changed because of the fall. So those are two places in the Bible we can go for philosophical answers. I would say too, and we get this in the Bible, we get this other places, that suffering is powerful for what it does in our lives. It changes us for the better. I think, and I've heard other people say this, that we will be different souls in heaven because of what we've gone through here on earth. If we've become people who persevere, if we have become courageous people, if we have become kind people, we often are becoming that way because of going through tough times. You know, the old saying is, no pain, no gain. Well, that's pretty much what we're talking about here. Character gets built. Paul talked about it. It's in several places in the Bible. So I think that's another value to what we're going through as far as pain and suffering here on earth. Here's something else you might think of as far as another philosophical answer. Some bad things happen actually can produce good results. Now, it doesn't mean it was good that a bad thing happened, but at least things can come out of it to improve us. For example, an airplane crashes. That's awful. We lose people. That's terrible. A lot of families are devastated. But what comes out of that? They take that black box. They look at that airplane. They look at the design. They look at all sorts of features of it, the weather, and they can improve that airplane. It's far safer to fly today than it was even 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and certainly safer than 50 years ago. A disease comes and ravages people, and we learn from the disaster of that. We learn how to come up with better antibiotics or vaccinations or whatever it is. So even terrible events can be turned around for good. And then finally, still talking about Christian philosophical answers, this one is probably the linchpin of it all. It's called the free will defense. Think about this. The human soul, the human being, is a individual that has free will. And that free will gives us freedom. We can choose. And God thought that was so important that He built that into every one of us. Unlike animals, we're not the same as animals. Doesn't matter what PETA and these other groups say, we are not just another animal. We can make true moral choices. Animals can't. They go by instinct. They do whatever they're programmed to do. But we can make moral choices. God thought that was so important, He built that into us. And unfortunately, we can use it for evil. We can use it for good, but we can also use it for evil. We see it every single day. We see it in our own lives. We make some good choices, but we make some evil choices as well. But if we don't have this kind of freedom, this free will inside of us, we're not human beings anymore. We're zombies. We're robots. We're programmed. If you built a doll to tell you I love you, it would mean nothing because you programmed it. That's all the doll can do. So God thought it was important. He trusted us. He wanted that kind of connection with us to respond to Him, and He gave us that kind of freedom, and we've abused it, but that's part of the problem. But it was there for a good intention, to give us a difference, to make a difference between us and the animal kingdom. So there are some Christian philosophical answers. Here's another thing to think about. I love this, because I do it too. We point and we look at evil out in the world and we say, God should get rid of that evil. And we point to whatever it is, mass slayings someplace, suffering in Africa, starvation someplace, tyranny in North Korea. We say, God should get rid of evil. Well, don't we commit moral crimes too? So here's the question to think about. If God really agreed, said, okay, I'm coming at 12 noon, I'm going to get rid of evil all across the globe, we would say, oh, great, thank you, God. So the question is, God comes in, intervenes in this world at 12 o'clock, he gets rid of evil and across the entire world. Here's my question. Where would we be at 12:01? We're gone, right? Because in that 1 minute, we've all committed some sort of moral crime, moral sin, haven't we? But I love it because it's so much easier to point out at somebody else. There's the sinner. There's the crime. There's the pain. There's the person causing the problem. But we're doing the same thing. We just like to compare ourselves to somebody like an Adolf Hitler. Hey, I'm not as bad as Hitler. Well, probably. But we're no saint. We're no perfect person. So I love that comment about asking God to get rid of evil. Well, he could. But he's handling it a different way, because if he got rid of all evil, I think we're all goners. What about natural disasters? We haven't talked about that yet. So we've got this world that operates generally pretty well, but then an earthquake happens. A tsunami takes place. A hurricane rips across Florida. A tornado sweeps through the Midwest, and we see devastation. We see loss of life. We see people in tears. We see homes destroyed. And the question might be, why? Why would this have to happen? Well, like other events, I'm sure one thing is that it tends to bring us closer to God. Remember after 9/11, a lot of people started praying that had never prayed. There were signs up about God bless the United States and things like that. So I think that's one thing. I think we can go back to the fall again and talk about natural disasters. This earth is in upheaval. Nature is paying a price for our sins back in the time of Adam and Eve. And then thirdly, as far as natural disasters, a lot of it, and this will be more of a scientific answer, and so I don't know all the details, so this will be a little vague, but a lot of scientists say that we need the kinds of things that can create, unfortunately, problems for us. Let's pick one thing, earthquakes. Okay, so let's consider earthquakes for just a second. They're devastating. They can do some terrible things. But what are earthquakes coming from? The fact that we have plate tectonics, where pieces of the crust bump up against each other and can snap or jump apart, and there's your earthquake. But what's that purpose? Is it just to kill people? Absolutely not. The earth needs plate tectonics for it to release the right kinds of chemicals and to create life. You don't have life on a terrestrial planet unless you have plate tectonics. Well, same thing with winds. We absolutely have to have winds. If we don't have winds, we don't have life. Well, those winds can produce some terrible results, can't they? Well, what about the sea rushing into the land and swamping a bunch of low-lying villages and all? You have to have an ocean as well. And so you put these things together and you find out that it's all part of making this world exist the way it is. You can't build an earth that supports life without these kinds of incidents being possible and actually probable. They will happen. Well, let's go to the other kind of Christian answers that I talked about a few minutes ago. We've heard the more philosophical answers to the problems of pain and suffering. Well, here are the ones that will nourish our souls, the emotional responses. Let's think about this for just a minute. Here's our first point under this issue. We claim, as Christians, we can have a personal relationship with a God who loves us. Now, that seems obvious. We hear it every Sunday. We sing it in our songs. But can we look at it from the outside for just a minute? Let's think about other gods and other religions. Paul goes to the Athenians, the Greeks, and he says, God is not far from you, and he wants to have a relationship with you. That was amazing to the Greeks, because their gods did not love people, did not yearn for interaction with the people. They knocked people around. Some of the male Greek gods raped women. It was just an awful thing. You just did not want the gods interested in you. They were awful. What about Islam today? There's a very distant God, an inscrutable God. Allah is somebody that you never can figure out, does not care about a personal relationship with his people. He just places a lot of demands on them. This is amazing. Here Christianity talks about a God of love, of compassion, who yearns for us. He already had a personal relationship before the earth in the Trinity. They already had a love affair with each other, a personal warm commitment to each other, and yet he goes beyond that to create human beings to have a relationship with him. Is that amazing or what? Along with that, here's another emotional answer. We have the only God who has wounds. God thought it was so important. He loved us so much. We know this from John 3:16. He came down into this world of pain and suffering, took it all on himself for us, and was actually brutally put to death. And of course, those words of Jesus on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me, echo down through the centuries, don't they? I mean, we can go through tough times, but we never go through tough times without God. But what about Jesus? He actually felt, unlike the rest of us, felt for the first time a complete separation from God. And here he had it forever in the past, agreed to come to this earth and to have that beautiful relationship shattered, and to be despised as he was, and to be physically mauled the way he does. So we have a God who really does understand what we're going through, and in fact went through far, far worse than we ever could. In addition, we're offered the Holy Spirit, right? We get this kind of personal connection in our lives, not just out there in space somewhere. That's amazing. The Holy Spirit is there as our comforter, as Jesus said. Here's another emotional response to pain and suffering, the Christian response. This world is not all there is. Isn't that amazing news? Again, we've heard it 1,000 times, but this world does not end for us at the grave. So think about a Christian who's called into that bedside of the dying child that I mentioned earlier. So he or she walks in, here's the grieving family, here's the child fading away. What does the Christian say? Remember, the atheist says, too bad, tough luck. Sorry, you just didn't win out in the game of life. At least she'll be out of her suffering. Well, now the Christian walks in and says, you will meet this child again. This child will live. This child will be healed. We have a body later on. We're not going to be floating through the universe just spirits and kind of vague, thin souls, wispy souls floating around. We will be reunited someday with our body. It's a physical resurrection that's going to happen like Jesus did. That's an amazing thing. We will be in a world without pain, a world without tears, a world of utter joy to be with others. We'll have relationships that will be just magnified compared to the relationships we have here. So let me end on a few final thoughts. Again, this was not a complete view, just some things to think about when it comes to the pain and suffering, the problem of pain and suffering. How about this? First of all, let's get used to the idea, and I'm sure we are down deep, but let's get used to that idea that evil is in all of us. It's not in a group of people. It's not in one person who gets caught and is arrested. Evil is in all of us. I'm always reminded of G.K. Chesterton back about 1900. He was an English intellectual, and a British newspaper had put out a request to hear from some intellectuals regarding what were the problems as they turned the century over to 1900, and they were so excited about the new century. They thought they'd be able to fix all the problems. Of course, in 14 years, they'd be killing each other in Europe. But they felt that this is going to be the century of progress. And so intellectuals were asked, simple question, what's wrong with the world? So some responded, oh, it's education. We just need to do X, Y, and Z and make our schooling better. Others said, it's a problem of sticking people into large cities. So we need to figure out how to make the large cities work. And so person after person, politics, you know, we just need to fix our governments. Person after person had long, incredibly complicated ways to make the world okay. Well, when Chesterton was asked that question, what's wrong with the world? He sent in a two-word reply, I am. Isn't that powerful? What's wrong with the world? I am. And every one of us can say that as well. We are the problem. It's not external, it's internal. We're all broken people. Now, based on that, here's another final thought. if that's true, if we really believe that, the problem is within, it's not without, then all these attempts that we've seen over the past hundreds of years, frankly, of building a utopia on Earth are not ever going to work, are they? Look what happened in Russia. Lenin came in and said he was going to fix it up and, you know, put Marxism to work. And then Stalin followed. How'd that work out? Terrible. Mao said he would take care of China. He'd build a utopia in China. Slaughtered millions of his own people. Pol Pot said he'd do the same thing in Cambodia. What's happened in North Korea? So these tin pot dictators come in and say they're going to set up a utopia on Earth. All they do is crush the people and cause unbelievable suffering. Something else we can do is to think about is to help people who suffer. There are so many great organizations. We can stand up to evil. Things like Open Doors ask Christians to put pressure on different governments to release Christians that have been unfairly imprisoned. And so we can help. We can look out and see who needs our help, see what organizations might provide some assistance. And one more thing, final thought. We should probably be practicing our response and think through this issue of pain and suffering before we face it in our own lives. It's a little late to be in the middle of a disastrous situation and then say, you know, I guess I should build my philosophy now about how to deal with this. It's too late at that point. We need to have thought it through. We need to have read our Bible. We need to have a determination of how we're going to face it. Because it's not a question of if we have pain in our lives, if we're going to suffer. We will. It's just a matter of when. And then let me end on this one. We know enough of God's goodness to deal with things that we really don't understand that come into our lives. That's kind of a long sentence, but we have seen over and over again answers to prayer, people coming to the Lord that we didn't expect to come to the Lord. We have had those times of sharing where we've heard of other people and how what they've gone through and how God has been there for them. We have seen God working to our good in enough situations that when something comes into our life that we really don't understand, we don't get it, we're puzzled, we're in pain, we know because of that goodness that we've seen so many times that we can deal with the things that we really don't understand. Let me end with just a couple of places that you might want to go for some additional information, additional reading. We do have some other MP3 pieces on the Emmanuel Faith webpage, but let me add to that a book called The Case for Faith, one of Lee Strobel's books, has a chapter about the issue of pain and suffering. In addition, I can't remember who did it, but they've put out a DVD with Lee Strobel and interviewing some people about the issue of pain and suffering. It's powerful. It's got some interviews with Johnny Erickson Tada and another person and some of the horrific things they went through, but how faith in God and being Christians enabled them to get through it. So The Case for Faith. So that's one. That's something that you might want to think about. Another one is Where is God When It Hurts with Phil Yancey. A really terrific read. It's been around for a while. Very simple, easy to read. Where is God When It Hurts? Phil Yancey, Yancey. He's a terrific writer. And then one that I'm working through right now, so I'm not completely done with it, but a powerful new book by Timothy Keller. He's the author of The Reason for God and The Prodigal God. His new book is called Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering. And it's broken into three parts. The first part does what we were talking about earlier, sort of the philosophical answers about pain and suffering, but the middle and the last part deal with real practical ways to think about pain and suffering and to get our way through it and to come out the other side better Christians, not bitter, not disappointed, not alienated from God, but doing what God would want us to do in those situations. So I'd recommend those. So I hope we can face this with confidence in the God of the universe who does care for us.